time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce here with us, and interested to hear about this book, Bruce.
And what a great piece of music to lead into this. Yeah. Oh, so this book is called The Fireballer. It's by a man named Mark Stevens. It came to me because my friend Lisa Taylor, with a good friend I went to graduate school with, and she's an excellent poet and a very good short story writer and well-published. She is doing a writing conference with Mark. They both live in Colorado. And she said, you know, this might be for your radio show. Well, I guess, yeah, this is perfect for our radio show. Now, one of the people who blurbed this book is Stuart Onan. Now, people may remember that he and Stephen King wrote the book Faithful together, right, about the 2004 series, World Series, and or in baseball season. But also, Onan wrote a phenomenal book called A Prayer for the Dying, which is in second, which is in first person, second tense, one of the most amazing accomplishments I've ever seen. So I see that on the front cover, and I think, well, that'd be pretty good. Then I start reading the book. And Mark is going to be on with us in May. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what I can tell you about this book without spoiling anything, because this is this is interesting. Now, normally I come on and I talk about how great it is to have wonderful character-driven fiction, you know, books and stories that are about people. That's true of this, but this comes with an idea that I had never, ever thought of, and I don't think most people had. But what if there was somebody who could throw from 60 feet 6 inches so hard and so accurately humans couldn't catch up to him? What would baseball do?
Well, they had it. It was Sid Finch, the fictitious character that George Plimpton created.
Well, that's true. Aroldis Chapman has, in his prime, was clocked at 106.3. No one's been clocked faster. And the theory at the time was that was about the fastest a human could react to a pitched baseball. Well, along comes Frank Rider, who has in his past something that will haunt him for much of his life, something that happened when he was a kid. And he can really bring it. And he goes to a Division II college, and he figures out how to not only bring it, but spot it. And he starts throwing 107, 108, 109, 110. And he gets to the major leagues, and he signs with the woeful Baltimore Orioles, which allows friends of the show like Gary Thorne to enter the book. And,
really?
Oh, yeah. And other people that have been on with us to enter the book, and people like Buster Olney and Jessica Mendoza, so that it ties in with real people. And the Orioles are lackluster, but they've got this ace. And if he can pitch that well, he can pitch multiple no-hitters in a season. He could win an incredible amount of games. So immediately what happens is people panic as they do, oh, my God, this will ruin baseball. Not the way the designated hitter, in my estimation, has sullied and ruined baseball.
Oh,
but you know,
oh, please.
But the, you know, these other – I mean, this is the whole – just of all, but so who are the stakeholders who would not want this to happen? Well, the owners, because yeah, it'll be great the day he shows up at the ballpark, but only the first go around, and then everybody's going to hate him. The DHs, because if they're not any extra help, who needs them, right? All the hitters, the union doesn't want this to happen. The owners, all kinds of other people. So Frank Rider is faced with a lot of things in his pitching career. He has a girlfriend back home, and her name is Maggie, and Maggie is, in a way, his guru. But, of course, a guy like this attracts attention from lots of other women, and he does a pretty good job of dealing with that. His parents are both school teachers and didn't have much interest in sports. He has a brother who's down in the minors, who... a twin brother who's down in the minors, and he has this one real complaint about baseball that comes out. He's pitching for the Orioles. They're playing, I guess it's, if I remember, it's the Twins, but they're playing another team, and their star player, the star player for the Orioles, gets drilled and breaks his wrist and is done for the season. So who's pitching that day but Frank Rider? And of course, here are the old unwritten rules, right? He's supposed to drill somebody in retaliation. But he has a 110-mile-an-hour fastball. His changeup baffles people at 93. They're out wow. in front of it, right? And so a pitch hits a player, and everybody assumes that Ryder has thrown this pitch on purpose. I will not tell you whether he did or he did not, but it leads him on a journey to a kind of redemption and an understanding of this incident in the past that has so haunted him. And it's great. The characters in this book, the owners, the GM, which is a young woman who's tough as nails and on her way up and fighting to really be the GM and not let the owner push her around. There are advisors, there are managers, there are teammates. There's a real, true, I think, appreciation of baseball. Now, Mark grew up in Lincoln, Massachusetts. He's been a television producer. He's been a journalist. He's won a number of awards for mystery books that he's written. He has a series of mystery books. But what he's done in this book is do something that's really hard to do. This book is very readable. There's nobody that's going to be confused by this book, even if they don't understand the game of baseball, which is always a good thing. You know, I've had recommended books, novels about hockey to people, and they don't understand the rules. But almost everybody understands enough about baseball that the rule stuff is not going to bother you. The idea that they might move the mound back is one that gets put out as a way to stop. Another is that every time he throws a pitch over 106, it would be a ball.
Wow.
You know, and there are all these other kinds of fascinations with things. People are going, yeah, right, the DH was going to ruin the game because everything was going to be 11 to 10. And this was going to ruin the game, and that was going to ruin the game. And this, you know... You know, the hitters are going to have to learn to catch up to this. And it's done in a way where the tension stays there the whole time. And the ending goes where I never thought it would go. So what I'm telling people, go out and buy the Fireball or go down go down the Briar Patch, see Gibran and the staff and get your copy of this book, because we're not going to talk to Mark till late in May. So you can all read this and know exactly what he's talking about when we get to sort of unpack it with him, because it's I had no idea where this was going to go, and I kept following, and I wasn't trying to guess. It was so well written, I wasn't guessing what was going to happen. I wasn't trying to read ahead to find out what was going to happen. This book is about 400 pages long, and I read it in three sittings because I couldn't put it down. It's 399 pages. I just couldn't put it down. Wow. And every time I had to put it down, I got mad that I had to put it down. Oh, God, I got to go do this. I got to go do that. It's from Lake Union Publishing. And I look forward to when we get a chance to talk to Mark, because he's a writer that's done a lot of different things in his life and won a lot of awards. But this is clearly a work of love, and it's a fabulous idea.
That sounds great. I can't wait to read it.
Yes. Well, it's yours next. I told him I'd give it to you.
That's wonderful. Yeah,
it's really, really fun.
The Fireballer by Mark Stevens, and he'll be with us in late May to talk about it. That's fantastic. Hey, we talked about it before we came on the air this afternoon, but wow, what a fun time we had Saturday night over at the Brewer Performing Arts Center with Dave Mallett and his band and you as the opening act. That was fantastic.
I'll tell you, it would have taken a nun, a jackhammer, and a horsewhip to get the smile off my face. I mean, I really had a great time. I was so glad and so honored to be part of it. And it was great to see Dave. It was great to hear the band again. I haven't heard Dave with a full band in probably 15 years. You know, we were talking about that. But that facility is so great. And it was a wonderful crowd, and the people were, you know, people were just so kind. I mean, after that, at the merchandise table, coming up and saying, "I like this, I like that song." It was really, really fun. I'd do that any day.
Yeah, that was great. Really great, and good to see Dave back out there and playing. He had a little medical issue, but he's on the road to recovery, and maybe he was pretty tired at the end of it the other night. But boy, he sounded good.
Yeah, we were saying we're just a couple of old tough Frenchmen.
That's right.
we're not going anywhere yet.
Well, that was a lot of fun. And Dave's got some more dates coming up, too. You can check his website for more information on that.